south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's start the day off with a little cost of living off the gringo tourist trail reality check. Now, you know, pretty much anywhere you live in Latin America, off the gringo tourist trail or on, every street corner seems to have a little kiosk where they're selling fruit, vegetables, junk food, beer, booze, recargas for cell phones, you know, putting minutes or data time into your smartphone. That's really big down here. Now, since most Latinos and Latinas don't have a contract plan for internet, phone, or data, they prepay as they go. Now, I know that to you listeners up in the first world, U.S., Canada, Europe, etc., that sounds really strange because you're all on some kind of plan. Well, that's something truly different about Latin America versus the first world. That means if you come down with your own smartphone and don't have roaming, you'll probably buy a chip here and prepay the time as you go. And practically all the little corner tiendas will charge you up like that. As for me, that's the way I do it. I bought a chip, put it into a phone, and with the particular company I'm with, for $3, I can buy 5 days unlimited internet and data time and get $3 worth of regular phone time, too. That might last if you're calling in country. Maybe an hour's worth of regular phone talk time. So that means about every 5 days, sometimes I go longer than that, I go over to a little corner kiosk, give the guy $3, and I'm charged up again for 5 days. So for $3, I get 5 days of unlimited internet and data time. There are other plans you could select. 1 day data time, 3 days, 5 days, 15 days. But I did the numbers, and the 5 day plan for me is the most economical. So my kind of dumb smartphone, which by the way is not registered in my name, cost me about $18 a month. Sure, I can have a contract plan, but I don't want one. Then you got to give up all that information, data, bank numbers, the whole bit, because they want to link it to a bank account to do a direct monthly deduction. I know that's the American way, but I don't go in for those things. All right, just a word about those corner tiendas or kiosks. It seems like every little corner kiosk you walk into, there are homemade baked items right at the checkout counter. Now, I very much doubt that city and health ordinances in any U.S. or Canadian city would let you just put anybody's, including the neighbor ladies, cakes, cookies, brownies, jam, etc., along with some very unusual-looking homemade edibles, too, in any store in the U.S., Canada, and the First World without violating a ton of city ordinances. I mean, look, think of those 9-year-old kids that get busted in the States for having a lemonade stand on their front yard without a permit. But here in Latin America, things are different. No matter what little kiosk or corner store or hole in the wall you walk into, you'll see homemade baked goods and custom-made, odd-looking sugary things for your sweet tooth. And you might ask, have I ever bought any of that stuff? Hell no. I'm sure a lot of it tastes great, maybe even fantastic, or it wouldn't be there and restocked day after day. The fact is, I've always been pretty cautious about hygiene. And you longtime listeners to the show have heard me say that I do not drink out of a glass unless I'm at a nice restaurant or at my own place. And I refuse to put ice cubes in any of my beverages unless I've made the ice myself. Why? Because I see how Latin Americans and their maids and cleaning ladies prepare stuff in the kitchen. Now, you might think I'm finicky and going overboard a bit. Captain Mango throws digs at me about that all the time. Meanwhile, at the seminar before last, it was Captain Mango who had an all-night date in the bathroom with the porcelain goddess, not me. You also have to remember, I have not had a case of Montezuma's revenge for at least 10 years now. Whereas for backpackers in the regular tourist crowd, it's kind of a rite of passage. So it does pay to watch what you eat and be a little finicky. And you know when you walk in a restaurant or in a restaurant's bathroom, whether the place is hygienic or not. Same is true when you're visiting someone's house or going into one of those corner kiosks or tiendas. I'm telling you, many Latinos are clueless. They really, really need to have a basic hygiene 101 course. So in the end, if you have a maid or cleaning lady, you're going to end up being their teacher. You're going to show them how not to cross-contaminate things. For example, you're the one who's going to have to teach them how not to use the same cleaning rag they use on the toilet that they use on the countertop and the floors. A lot of that going around, that's for sure. And you're probably also going to have to train them how to wash their hands thoroughly after touching raw chicken and how not to spread those raw liquids around. And you're going to have to show them how to use disposable paper products too. Otherwise, you'll find they're using the same contaminated cleaning rags and mops over and over again. But really, in a lot of ways, it's not their fault. Basically, it comes down to a water usage thing, because in Latin America, there's a big shortage of fresh water. Though, not if you live in a gated, guarded community or residential tower, or in an upper middle class or wealthy suburb. But as for middle class and lower middle class Latins, which make up probably 80% of the population, they're almost all on municipal water supplies, and they don't have water 24/7. So they use much less than they accommodate. And though it might appear that there's water 24/7, it's an illusion. You see, it's all about having a cistern underground or up on the roof that's collecting water at night when all are sleeping and usage is way down. And that water during the day is kicked back into the plumbing lines when the municipal water shuts off. And that can happen multiple times a day. So it appears like there's water 24/7, but only if you have a cistern. So you'd think every Latino household would have one, right? But that's not true. Very few lower middle class and poor Latinos, probably half of the population, have them. Why? It's all about the dough. It costs between $300 and $500 to get the pump and the plumbing and the cistern mounted and set up. So they just put up with the daytime water outages. They're used to it. So if you have a cistern, and every gringo and expat really should, that is, if you plan to live in a Latino subdivision that's on municipal water, if you don't, you'll be sorry. So make sure you check it out before you rent. Anyway, you'll find in houses that don't have cisterns, the water pressure during the day could be very low at times, coming out of the faucet the thickness of a pencil, even less. But when you think about it, a little stream of water is better than no water at all. And sometimes, with municipal water, could be daily, the tap will be dry for hours at a time. However, as mentioned, you won't notice that if you have a cistern, because it's got a sensor and kicks in when there's no water flow or the pressure's way down. So it's very important, if you're renting or buying, to ask the owner or the landlord if you've got water 24/7. And if you've got a cistern installed, ask him how reliable the municipality is in delivery of the water. Ask him what the water flow and pressure is like during the day. And also remember, he might say, yeah, we got water 24/7. But he's not telling you that it's coming from the cistern part of the time. What you want to know is if there's water 24/7 coming out of the water main, direct to your house. Of course, as mentioned before, if you're in a private subdivision with its own well, you'll have good water flow and pressure 24/7, even without a cistern. That's almost always the case in subdivisions for the upper middle class and wealthy. Your colony, colonia, that's what they call a subdivision down here, or housing development, will have its own water and plenty of pressure 24/7 and will not at all be at the mercy of the lard-ass bureaucrats at the municipal water supply, because you will not be hooked up to their system. Oh, and by the way, I've seen some studies here and there that say that municipal water supplies throughout Latin America are usually sized correctly for the given population and for population growth, and they really should have water 24/7. But the problem again, the endemic problem, is maintenance. Because it's been claimed over and over again that with all Latin American municipal water supplies, up to 50% of the water is lost, completely wasted, due to deteriorating underground pipes that are constantly leaking. In fact, you could prove it to yourself practically every day of the week. Just take a ride in your car through any big middle class or lower middle class residential area and tell me if you don't see some wet patches in the road or little streams of water from who knows where percolating up through the ground or running into a gutter. Now, of course, that happens in cities up in the States and Canada and Europe, too. But the difference is, here in Latin America, you could drive by that same spot a week later and still see the puddle or the wet patch. Oh, and another thing, you'll find if you're living in a place where you use municipal water, well, there just might not be a cistern at all, or you've got a very undersized one. And really, it's not the kiss of death, but it will cost a few bucks to get a cistern or an upgrade. Yep, most hardware stores have nice, big cisterns available. However, most Latinos with cisterns have bought undersized ones because they're cheaper. The most common cisterns you see on rooftops hold about between 100 and 200 gallons, a bathtub and a half or two. Well, that's okay and will work if your water goes out for 3-4 hours a day, but what if it goes out for an entire day or 2 days? I know that rarely happens, but you have to anticipate that the future, no matter where you are in the world, is going to be a more hazardous place to live in and more chaotic. I mean, that's the reason why you have a plan B in the first place, right? A plan B is nothing more than an insurance policy against the unknown. Well, we call it the unknown anyway, but we know most things in the world are not getting better by any means. They're deteriorating. So, for example, in the case of a cistern, if you've got a 200-gallon job, that'll get you through all the normal ups and downs if you're on a municipal water supply in Latin America. However, my suggestion is to get one that's 4 times as big. And since most roofs in Latin America are concrete, It can hold the weight. Now, as for me, I'm an engineer and I like to over-design things. I have a cistern that's 20 times as big as the average cistern you see in Latin America on the roof. Mine is an underground concrete cistern. It's actually under the garage slab. Holds about 5,000 gallons, about 50 bathtubs worth of water. Now, if the water were to be cut off completely, a 5,000-gallon cistern could last a single person, if he conserved and skimped, 3 or 4 months. Family of four, a month or so. And that's without collecting a single drop of rainwater. Of course, where I live, I have a way of collecting rainwater right off the roof. And if I pull a lever, it goes directly into the cistern. It's a great self-sufficient setup. Better yet, I'm in a big ecological subdivision that has its own well. So a system like that's got everything good going for it. But I'd be willing to bet practically no expats, gringos, or Latinos have such a system. When you have water, it's pretty steady. You just don't think about it. But you have to start somewhere. Starting with getting yourself an oversized cistern. I'm not talking about one of those 55-gallon drum-sized cisterns you see everywhere throughout Latin America. There are really two things I don't like about rooftop cisterns. One, they're extremely ugly, and two, you can't catch rainwater because they're above the roof line. By the way, cistern in Spanish is cisterna. They're called tinacos, too. Let's see, where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. I was talking about cleaning ladies, maids, and regular Latin American housewives, and hygienic food preparation, or lack of it. I mentioned that you'll probably be appalled when you look at the way your cleaning lady prepares food and cleans the house. You'll find out soon enough that you're going to have to teach her. Oh, and if you're thinking that all Latin Americans are unhygienic for some reason or other, or they've got really bad habits, I wouldn't go that far and I wouldn't generalize because it really all depends on the availability of water in a particular household. So, for example, if you're upper middle class and you live in a residential tower with its own pozo, a well is called a pozo down here, P-O-Z-O, rhymes with bozo. Or if you're in a nice subdivision that has its own well, meaning the water pressure is high and it's flowing all the time. People wash up more, take more showers, clean things more often, and well, they're more hygienic and it shows. Especially when you consider the average American uses about 100 gallons of water a day, whereas the average Latin American, that would be middle class, lower middle class, and poor, that takes in about 90% of the population, they're using about 25 gallons a day per person. So naturally, they skimp compared to first world people on general cleanup, showers, and hand washing. And it's your job to break your maid or cleaning lady out of that habit. Tell her she can use all the water she wants when it comes to cleaning things and washing up. Oh, and there's another thing gringos and expats don't realize till they've come down here and actually live for a while. You'll find if you're renting, let's say, in a middle-class Latin neighborhood and you're on municipal water, when the monthly bill comes, you're going to be shocked. Compared to first world prices, it's practically free. I've been in many houses on municipal water, and I've seen the bills lying around the house. And man, can you believe a monthly water bill of $1.54 or $3.16? Hey, that's the range. Well, that's because almost all municipal water supplies in Latin America are government-owned, operated, and subsidized. Meanwhile, if you're in a residential tower or subdivision that has its own well, you'll pay the real price of what it takes to get the water out of the ground and maintain the pump and the cistern and stuff. Then your bill just might be 10, 20, or even 30 bucks a month. No government subsidy there. And in reality, that's why middle and lower middle class Latinos get so upset and they go on huelgas, that means hit the streets and protest, when they find out their government is thinking about privatizing the water utility or privatizing anything for that matter. Why? Because they're addicted to the subsidies. They know when things are privatized, the price can often go up sometimes dramatically. Of course, the glaring exception to that rule is when the telephone companies went private. In that case, prices dropped dramatically. Anyway, when utilities privatize, the public doesn't seem to care. That service and quality will get infinitely better. All they care about is the price. And then you have the gringo do-gooders riling up the masses too. They like to do that. It never fails. 2 weeks later, they're back at the health club in Minnesota, full of themselves, bragging they scored a victory for water as a human right. Meanwhile, their utilities in Minnesota are all privatized. So then what's the answer? Well, I don't know, because the masses are so used to getting cheap subsidized water with the utility bleeding red ink all the time, but it doesn't matter because it's government, right? Then you've got the case when you privatize and suddenly your water bill goes from $2 to $10, which is the real cost of getting clean water to the tap. Then people freak out. They go nuts. They start rioting. Then you've got the case of farmers living on little homesteads way out in the boonies. They don't have municipal water, and many of them don't even have wells. They know that when it rains like hell here in Latin America, and they collect rainwater, or they pull it from a local river. In fact, I can't tell you how many times I've been way out in the boonies and I've seen 55-gallon drums positioned outside at a strategic corner of the house, collecting rainwater. In fact, I know an old farmer who does that. Got a couple of horses, driveway chickens, pretty good spread of land. But he does have a well, you know, one of those hand pump jobs. That's about 20 feet off the back porch in a little shed. It's like a real flashback to Depression-era farming. Crazier yet, this guy doesn't even have electricity, even though the electric company has offered to bring it out to him. And he's not biting. He's in no hurry. Oh, and this guy's even got a plow horse. Yep, he hand plows his little field of corn and beans. And you know, way out in the boonies in Latin America, his situation isn't that uncommon. But I'd be willing to bet you will never find a guy in his situation up in the United States or Canada. If you did, he'd be on 60 Minutes. Now, this guy grows his own stuff and he makes some money selling some beans and corn when the crops are good. But he makes most of his spending money by selling a kind of white cheese that his wife makes in the kitchen. He sells the stuff to some of those little kiosks I was talking about earlier in the show. Now, what that means is if the government were to suddenly lay down some rules saying that you couldn't sell that kind of stuff in stores without certain permits and inspections, well, that would sort of ruin this guy's lifestyle. So that's another conundrum. Should governments lay down a bunch of hygienic standards and force people to get permits, licenses, and inspections? Well, that's a hard one because when it comes to hygiene, there's got to be standards. But when the government gets involved, well, as they say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Now, where was I going with this? Oh, man, did I digress? I started this little rant, which turned into a big rant, intending to talk about the off-the-gringo tourist trail cost of living. So I'll lay this on you. Just a couple hours ago, I was power walking, and about 3 blocks from my place, there's a little store. And outside the place, in the shade, is a big bin full of mangoes. So I picked out 5, each one of them about the size of a dinosaur egg. Each one of them like a whole meal in itself. And I grabbed 5 bananas to put into a smoothie later. I have a smoothie every day with bananas and blueberries to mix in my powders and supplements. For me, it's about the only way to wash that stuff down. All right, so what do you think? What did 5 big dinosaur egg mangoes and 5 bananas cost? Oh, and by the way, there must have been a few hundred mangoes there. Some of them soft and too ripe, then some of them hard as a rock. You know, lots of first world people think eating a mango is hard work. First of all, they're loaded with sticky juice. You get the stuff all over your hands, and they've got that fiber that gets in your teeth, and you got to floss it out, or it's in there all day. So that's the problem with mangoes. However, about 1.5 years ago, an old Latino taught me some mango tricks. You da thunk I learned this stuff from Cap Mango, but not this time. So here's what you do. You don't want to choose a mango that's squishy on the outside like a rubber ball. So you choose one and you squeeze it hard. If it doesn't have any give at all, it's not ripe. But if it's got just the slightest little give, but not mushy, that's perfect. Then you take a very sharp knife. You cut 5 equally spaced longitudinal lines in it from top to bottom. Then you grab a tag of the skin on what would be the North Pole if it was the Earth, and you peel off the skin with the knife like a banana. But you just peel off the first 2 of the 5 sections. Then you can eat the thing like an apple, holding on to the skin that you haven't peeled off and biting into the meat. And in that state, it's not too hard or too ripe, so the fibers won't separate and get in your teeth. And man, you know, that works so well, I eat 1 big dinosaur egg mango a day. And since here in Latin America, there are probably 7 or 8 different kinds of mangoes, the gigantic ones aren't always in season, but there always seems to be mangoes around. Now, as far as mango juice, it's like orange juice. You have to have it freshly squeezed, or it's just not that good. Oh, and if you don't like mangoes too sweet, you can eat them like Latin Americans do, hard, like a hard pear. And when they're hard like that, the skin won't peel away like a banana. You have to cut it away with a knife like you're peeling a potato. And that's the way most Latinos eat those mangoes. When they're hard, they're not sweet. They're acidic. And Latinos put salt and some other condiments on them. To me, it's kind of a sin to eat them that way. But to each his own. Oh, and here's a really important mango tip. When you buy a mango, inspect it very carefully. Don't ever buy one that's got a pinhole in it or even the slightest look that it may have been punctured in any way. Now, mangoes could have black and brown spots and scars on them. That's not a problem. As long as they're still hard and not soft. If they're soft, underneath those spots and scars, there could be lots of nasty, mushy bruising. Now, the reason why you want to reject these things, even if there's one tiny pinhole, is because certain kinds of disgusting insects love to burrow their way into those things, including one particular kind of spider. Enough said about that. But back to the original question. I bet you thought we'd never get to it. 5 dinosaur egg mangoes and 5 bananas. What do you think that cost me at the local corner store? Would you believe 40 cents? And now, I can hear some of you listeners thinking Johnny's gone off his rocker, he's gone crazy. spending way too much time talking about the lowly Mango, though I wouldn't say that in front of Captain Mango. Well, there's a reason for it, because, you know, up in the States, mangoes are very expensive and hard to come by. In fact, I don't know of anybody up in Chicago, friends, relatives, neighbors, anyone, that ever bought a mango. Too hard to transport, therefore expensive. But as luck would have it, they're everywhere here in Latin America. They're grown on trees right out in the streets. And they're really great, so I'm telling you right now, take advantage of them, even if you've never tried one before. You'll see. On that note, let's take an email. This one's from Kyle. He says, Johnny, what's wrong with kids today? I invited my two college kids, a college, by the way, which I pay an arm and a leg for, to come with me on a whirlwind trip to Honduras, Panama, and Guatemala. They hemmed and hawed and said they would go, but only if I made a side trip to Costa Rica or Cancun, because they said boring places like Guatemala, Panama, and Honduras are not the usual places where college kids hang. The thing is, Johnny, I want to come down and see Latin America off the tourist trail like you've been talking about. Been wanting to do that for a long time, but I need someone to come with me. And the ex-wife, well, you don't bring your ex-wife. And if you got two kids in college, you'd think that would be a great adventure for them. But the truth is, I just can't seem to get anybody to go with me. And I don't like the idea of traveling alone, especially since I don't speak Spanish. Signed, Kyle from Detroit, Michigan, 54 years old. There's a PS here. He says, Johnny, whether I make it down to Latin America or not, I will be signing up for your January or the next seminar. If I can get one of my smartphone-addicted sons to come down with me. If not, you can hook me up with a roommate, right? All right, Kyle, yeah, I can probably hook you up with a roommate. Now, you want my opinion, right? Your first mistake is that you don't invite your kids anywhere. If you're paying for their nice little lifestyle and their university, you get to tell them where they're going. To me, it's not a matter of negotiation. You pay the bills, you get to tell them what life's going to be like when they're living under your roof and not paying for it. Hey, I know those are words people don't want to hear, but those are pretty much the exact words my mother and father said to me when I was up on my high horse trying to rebel. Only my parents never gave me an allowance, bought me a car, or paid for my college. They still had their rules, and as long as I was living under their roof, I had to follow them. I know, we're living in the 21st century, and that's old-fashioned thinking, isn't it? Which begs the question, what's wrong with kids today? Us old fogies would say, right? Like our parents said about us and their parents said about them. Well, let's just talk for a second how things have changed. Like my 26-year-old nephew with rich doctor parents who crashed three of their cars and totaled them, lost a number of jobs because he just can't seem to wake up before 9 in the morning. Turns out their working hours are just not attuned to his schedule. Oh, and he's the kid who told his grandmother, my mother, that he doesn't really need a job or a career because when his parents die, he's going to be rich. Imagine that. My mother, his grandmother, flipped out when he said that, but that's the mindset of many entitled kids today. Man, can you think of a better reason why I want to live 3,000 miles away from that mess? And I understand, I've heard stories at least, that there's one like him in every family. Oh, and the saga continues. His mother, my sister, is kind of a prepper. She had a nice gold coin collection, and one day it went missing. He took it and spent it all. Now, as for me, I could see early on this kid was going to be trouble. In fact, when I popped back to Chicago for a visit for 2 weeks in, I think it was 1999, I got invited to a birthday party, and that kid, my nephew, who was about 6 years old at the time, was jumping up and down on a glass end table, and I yelled at him because if he'd have broken the thing, man, somebody would surely have had to go into the emergency room. Well, I yelled at him and made him cry, and my sister came over, got in my face, read me the riot act, and said I had no business yelling at her kids. I have no business disciplining kids at all because I don't have any. After that, she didn't talk to me for 2 years. So anyway, he grew up, but he really didn't grow up. 26 years old and a mess, I thought, maybe he's on drugs. My sister got mad when I recently asked her that question. I said, are you sure he's not on anything? Now remember, this is a guy who wrecked three cars. And my sister emphatically said no, but you know how kids lie to their parents. Especially when it comes to substance abuse, right? Anyway, I said, what about prescription drugs? She said, yeah, he's on some prescription stuff, but no more than the next guy. Most millennials are, she said. Of course, that makes everything all right. Anyway, here's a list of what he takes that's no more than the next guy. 50 milligrams of Vianesse for ADHD. He's taken 4 milligrams of ondansetron hydrochloride for nausea. He's taken 60 milligrams of duloxetine hydrochloride, which is a generic for Cymbalta for anxiety and depression. Doesn't that sound strange? How could you be anxious and depressed at the same time? He's also taken 2 milligrams of Amplify, which is an anxiety and depression drug, and he takes Clonopin, 1 milligram as needed, for anxiety and depression. That's 3 drugs for anxiety and depression. Meanwhile, my sister says he's not taking any more prescription drugs than the next 26-year-old. Meanwhile, here in Latin America, I don't know of a single teenager, kid, or young adult that's on any prescription medicine at all. None. And if you talk to a Latin pharmacist, he'll tell you they do stock those drugs, and the only people taking them are, drum roll please, the entitled Latino kids of the upper middle classes and wealthy. In other words, the screwed up entitled kids of extreme gringo wannabes. We're talking about kids that go to high-end bilingual private schools. Think we can draw some conclusions here? Good thing they only make up around 2% of the Latin population. That reminds me of an IEEE meeting I once went to in Chicago, right before I came down here to Latin America, so that was a long time ago. The IEEE is a professional engineer society. It stands for the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers. Anyway, there were about 100 of us engineers in the room, and the speaker said, "You guys are all successes. Raise your hand, all of you, who could retire right now." And more than half the people raised their hands. Then one guy yelled out, "I could have retired years ago, but I'm putting 3 kids through college." Then the speaker said, "Raise your hand if you could be retired right now, but you have to keep working to put your kids through college." About 80% raised their hands. Then he said, "Raise your hands, all of you who had parents who paid your way through college." Only about 5 hands out of 100 went up. Then he said, "Oh, then that must mean you either got a full boat scholarship or you worked your way through college, huh?" Then he said, sarcastically, "My, how we've suffered." Then he said, "Raise your hand if you worked or were holding down a job when you were going to college yourself." About 3/4 of the room raised their hands. Then he said once again, "My, how we've suffered to get where we are today." Then he said, "I bet you guys out there who have kids in college don't let them work, because you wouldn't want to subject them to the horrors you had to go through to get to where you are today. After all, it might interfere with their studies or party time." Then he said, "It's good to know that your kids are not at all following in the footsteps of their very successful parents." Then he said, "You know, this is a very interesting social experiment you're involved in. I wonder how it's going to turn out, though I have some idea." Then he said, "One last question. How many of you successful engineers bought your kid a car in high school or college?" And about 90% of the people raised their hands. Then he said, "I think you know what the next question is going to be. How many of you had parents who bought you a car?" And about 5 out of that 100 engineers raised their hands. Then he said, "My, my, how you guys have suffered for your successes." South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.